Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 177 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page and find us on audioboom.com and log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. And I've got a guest today from Locked On Knicks, but honestly, he could host a podcast called Locked On Russell Westbrook, or maybe we'll just call it Locked On Westbrook. It's a little catchier. Jared Dubin, what's going on?
It would be like, I don't know. There would have to be some sort of let Westbrook be Westbrook element to it. I'm trying to think of like a good name that combines that.
That could just be the slogan.
Well, that's already like the official slogan of the internet. So,
but it could be like locked on Russ. Letting Westbrook be Westbrook every day.
Like locked on something. I don't know. I'll have to think about it. We can think about it throughout this podcast.
How about just locked on triple doubles?
Yeah, you want to just get right into it? Let's talk about the triple doubles because
okay, so. Well, let's preface this because Tuesday night could be historic night.
Get out of here with your could be nonsense.
That's a big record.
Oh, it's huge. That's why I want to go here first. I do not like that it's become like a thing where people try to signify how smart they are by talking about how like triple doubles aren't actually that impressive. And it's all about stat chasing and uncontested rebounds and all this nonsense. It's cool, okay? Like, it's awesome that he's got all these triple-doubles. And it's cool that he's going after them. And it's cool that he's getting them. Like, I feel like I'm on crazy pills with some of these takes about the triple-doubles.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, here's the thing. The arguments against the triple-doubles, like, we have a fascination with round numbers. Like, that's true. Like, here, the thing is, going for 40, 15, and 9 is obviously more impressive than going for 10, 10, and 10. So I understand that part of it. If you just want to acknowledge, like, triple-doubles aren't, on the whole, like, it's not the most impressive thing that you could possibly do, I'm with you. But to then take the next step and be like, well, it's actually not that impressive to average a triple-double, that's crazy. Because people have been chasing stats for a long, long time, and no one's done this. People have very conveniently forgotten that Kevin Durant was chasing the heck out of 50-40-90 that MVP year in 13-14. He was giving up shots, and he won at 50-40-90. There was one year, remember when LeBron was just like, screw it, I'm only concentrating on field goal percentage? I think it was his third year in Miami. I know he had a better one his fourth year, but I think it was his third year when he was pretty openly just like, I only just want to have a great field goal percentage. And he was pretty openly chasing that. Like, great players want to get numbers. And the fact that he's actually doing it while wanting to get the numbers actually should not make it less impressive. It should make it more.
Yeah, first of all, it's still cool. And like, is it definitive? Like, there's so much of the MVP race has been tinged with people using whatever stats they want to just make whatever argument they want. Like, you see this stuff floating around on Twitter today. Like, James Harden has contested twice as many shots this year as Russell Westbrook. How could Westbrook possibly be the MVP? Like, okay, I'm sure you could find some other stat that has Westbrook doing some kind of nonsense that Harden doesn't do. Like, there is no nobody at this point that's just saying something just to say it. They're always making some sort of point about the MVP race. My thing is, none of this stuff should be definitive. Like, okay, Westbrook's averaging a triple-double. That doesn't 1,000% no arguments mean that he's the MVP. Okay, Harden is doing things more efficiently than Westbrook. Okay, that's great also. That doesn't 1,000% no arguments mean he's the MVP. Like, all of this stuff should be taken into account. It's not just, like, there's no one number to me that proves that anybody's the MVP over anybody else. And it seems like that's what the entirety of the discussion has become, is people using one number to say a guy is the MVP or a guy isn't the MVP. And it's like everything you see about the MVP race right now is somebody quoting some stat as a way to either advance the position of their favorite guy or to denigrate the position of somebody else.
Yeah. So what you're saying right now is that people on the internet are incapable of having a nuanced conversation.
Yeah, pretty much.
Shocking.
No, it's just like the MVP race in particular has become really dumb, I think. And it's disappointing because, you know, it's like the best race in years.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. And my big thing with the MVP, you can be the smartest person in the world and you can think that Russell Westbrook's the MVP and that's great. You're still the smartest person in the world. And you could be the smartest person in the world and think James Harden is the MVP, and that's also great. You are still the smartest person in the world. There is no right answer in this case. Both of these guys are having absolutely unbelievable, historically incredible seasons. And honestly, who you think should be the MVP probably says more about how you define MVP than it does about either of these guys, which is fine too, because people have different definitions, and it's intentionally left the definition is intentionally left ambiguous, and that's fine. Like, that's great. That's the way it's kind of supposed to be. I think part of the reason they leave it ambiguous is because they want debate, and they want intelligent debate, and they want people talking about it as much as possible and all that kind of stuff. But you should really use this as an opportunity to prop up your own candidate. Like, you should not be using it as an opportunity to denigrate the other, because if you do that, then you're missing the point of these two. And you got LeBron and Kawhi too, just having incredible seasons. You're really missing the point of four unbelievable seasons. Even the fifth candidate, like, people say it's a four-person race, and it is a four-person race because, like, Isaiah Thomas or John Wall or Stephen Curry, none of those guys is going to finish higher than fifth. But the race for the fifth candidate is interesting. I mean, those three guys I just named are having incredible seasons and all have strong arguments for themselves. It's a great race in every aspect, even all the way at the bottom of the ballot.
Yeah, and look, there's four or five guys that have good arguments for fifth. You know, it's not even a one-man race for that five spot. And it's also like, I had a discussion with somebody on Twitter today. I'm drawing a blank who it was, but the thing about so much of the discussion, like I said, is it's become so negative as people aren't even so much making the case for their guy as they are making the case against somebody else. And that sucks because there's so much of a positive case that you could make for any one of the, you know, four guys that are within the inner circle discussion. Like, you don't need to make an argument against Westbrook to make one for Harden. And you don't need to make one against Harden to make one for Westbrook. Like, you could make a totally positive case for any one of those guys, and people would rather just be like, no, there's no argument. It can only be James Harden. There's no way you can think Russell Westbrook is the MVP. It's like, oh, it's so dumb.
That's honestly why that's my criticism of how Daryl Morey has handled this. I like Daryl Morey. I think he's a brilliant guy, and I love how accessible he is with us, and how honest he is publicly and all that stuff. It doesn't make me not like Daryl Morey or anything. It's just like a mini criticism of just kind of how, like, Morey has spent a lot of time denigrating Westbrook's, and I don't want to come off as, like, you know, a shill for the Thunder organization, because I don't think I am one. I just kind of think this goes along the lines of what we were saying before about how it's a better look if you're able to just make your MVP argument by propping up the guy who you think should be MVP, as opposed to doing the opposite. It's not like this is like an era where we're struggling to find a good MVP candidate, and it's like, well, this guy doesn't play defense, but this guy doesn't facilitate for his teammates. No, there are a lot of really good arguments to make for a lot of these guys. And I just kind of think it's thought it was a bad look with like the couple of tweets that Daryl Morey has had, kind of digging Russ and that kind of stuff. I just kind of think they're it's a little bit of a battle. And I like Daryl Morey a lot, and I don't. It's not like a hit on his character or anything like that. I just think that those tweets, like if I were the general manager of the Houston Rockets, which I wouldn't be because I wouldn't have an MVP candidate if I were. But if I were the general manager of the Houston Rockets, like I would handle that differently.
Yeah, I mean, Daryl has gotten in on the weird round number fascination, which, like, yeah, it is weird that we're so fascinated with round numbers, but it's also, like, obvious why, because that's just the way the human mind works, and, you know, it is what it is. Like, we're fascinated with round numbers. And then he tweeted out a bunch of Harden round numbers, too, and, you know, he's got some nice round numbers also. The thing that I didn't like was the Rockets official Twitter account after the Rockets Thunder game where they were just like, more wins. That's the MVP right there. Like, if, and they did it with like, by saying that Harden made his case in that game. And if wins was all that matters and having more wins was all that matters, then that particular game that they were tweeting about actually meant nothing because it was already settled that the Rockets were going to have more wins. So, like, it's just like, There's so much that we could talk about in the MVP race that has nothing to do with the way it's being talked about, and it's just really disappointing that I mean it's not so much disappointing because I guess I knew it was going to happen based on like the tenor of the MVP race 2 years ago when it sort of was the same way and it was just like Thunder fans making arguments why Curry and Harden weren't the MVP, Rockets fans making arguments why Westbrook and Curry weren't the MVP, and Warriors fans making arguments why Westbrook and Harden weren't the MVP. So I guess I'm not all that much surprised, but I'm definitely disappointed.
So two things. Number one, that Rockets tweet that you mentioned, it doesn't bother me as much with the teams doing it, like the team social media accounts, because I'm kind of into team social media accounts throwing shade. But the reason I thought that was bad shade thrown was because it said like wins at the top, and then it said triple doubles are just a number. Well, here's the problem: wins are just a number too, so that doesn't make sense.
it undercut their own argument in like three different ways.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. Like
wins are also a number.
That's a number.
And again, if it was all about wins, then that game didn't actually matter.
Right. Other thing, I wanna give props to a dude who had my favorite tweet of the last week, which I retweeted a few days ago and I thought was so funny. It was Herman Frankman said, my favorite Westbrook triple-double attack is that it is, quote, just an obsession with round numbers, as if human nature is the issue here.
I do like that.
It's a great tweet. Good. It's an awesome way of summing up that the entire conversation we just had in 140 characters. I think it's really funny.
And look, I don't have a vote. Do you have a vote? Did you ever find that out?
Votes came in today, and I didn't get one. So unless they send out another wave of them, I assume I don't have one.
Right. So anyway, neither one of us have a vote. We could talk openly about what we think will happen, should happen, whatever. So if you say that you think player X is the MVP, somehow that means that you don't think player Y or player Z or player double A or whatever you want to call it has a worthy candidacy, or you hate those players, or you think that it would be a travesty if they won MVP. Like, I think there's four very worthy candidates. I think you could put them in pretty much any order. I have a particular order I would put them in, but that doesn't mean that, like, if somebody else wins and not the guy that I would have voted for first, that means that it's wrong or bad. Like, it's just so much of it has become black and white, and this is it, no questions, no arguments, no nuance. And in a race like this, like last year I think was not even necessarily like that. I think it was pretty clear that Steph was the MVP, and that was reflected in the voting as it was unanimous. But I think it's different this year, where I think there's going to be even more visceral reactions to it from certain crowds just based on the way the discussion has developed throughout the season.
You know, it's weird because I think if I had to guess, just from conversations that I have with people who are probably voters, and like based on, you know, our buddy Tim Bontemps at the Washington Post did a did a media poll of.
I have something to say about that when you're done with your point, though.
Yeah, of like voters or not definitely voters, but of guys who could be voters and media people, that kind of stuff. And Harden won that pretty cleanly. So just based on that, even though it was a few weeks ago, and Russ has played great the last couple of weeks, so maybe he's made that a little bit tighter. But just based on that stuff, it does seem like Harden at least has the upper leg. But what's funny is I feel like if Westbrook wins, there will be less outrage than if Harden wins, even though I feel like Harden is probably the favorite amongst the voters.
I think that's true also. I'll start there. The second thing was, so I had said something on Twitter last week because I was watching the Thunder Magic game that Russ basically came back and won, single-handedly in the fourth quarter. And, you know, listening to the announcers rave about him and talking about he's averaging a triple-double. How is he not the MVP? And one of the things that I thought was sort of discounted in Tim's survey, just based on, you know, how I know he conducted it, you know, it was almost exclusively, if not entirely, writers that he talked to. And I think that the TV contingent is more in Westbrook's favor than the writer contingent. And I think that that could play an interesting role in the voting. But we also just found out today that I think team broadcasters are not voting anymore, or at least team employees. I don't know if it's broadcasters also, because some of the broadcasters are not actually team employees. They're just, you know, the network that broadcasts the games. So I'm not sure entirely how that works. But I do think there could be a bigger Westbrook contingent among the voting block than it might seem from Tim's survey, because way more TV people are on the Russ should be MVP train than writers are, I think. Like, you watch ESPN, and it's like Jalen Rose, Chauncey Billups, T-Mac, those guys are all like, Russ is the MVP, he's averaging a triple-double. A lot of, I think, team broadcast, road broadcast, whatever you want to call it. Also, I feel like feel the same way. There's obviously others that think it should be, you know, Harden or Kawhi or LeBron, or, you know, maybe even somebody else. But I do think there is a stronger Westbrook contingent among the TV voting block. I'm interested in your thoughts on that particular line of reasoning.
It makes sense. I mean, TV people are notoriously less into the analytics side than writers. So it makes – and Harden, if you
– But do you really need to be using, like, a ton of analytics to make the Harden case? Like,
no. His round numbers
are basically the same as Russ's with, like, you know, whatever it is, like an assist and a half more and two rebounds less.
No, but I think – okay, a lot of the people you just named are former players.
Mm-hmm.
I think former players really identify with Russell. Players really identify with him. First of all, people from, like, previous eras, like, what will be really interesting, here's the thing. Like, Clyde Drexler, I'm sure, thinks that James Harden is the MVP because he's Clyde Drexler and he's with Houston. But I bet you if Clyde Drexler were the broadcaster for another team, he would think Russell Westbrook was the MVP.
Like, if he was broadcasting for the Blazers?
Yes. Yes. Like, I bet you he would think that Russell Westbrook was the MVP. And I don't mean that as, like, I don't mean to assassinate Clyde Drexler's character. What I mean by that is, like, former players really identify with his personality in the way that he is so basketball all the, you know, he's Kobe-like, right? And so, like, the way that he, I mean, in terms of his personality, the way that he's so basketball all the time, the way that he goes all out, his toughness, I think former players really, really appreciate that. I think players around the league in general appreciate that. But I think, like, the era of, like, the guys don't play this way anymore, everybody's soft, and everyone's been best friends since they were in AAU and blah, blah, blah. I think that era has a greater appreciation for Westbrook than they do for most other players around the league. You hear that when they talk about him. A lot of former players say that he's their favorite player to watch.
Yeah. And
that's not, like, a ridiculous – I mean, look, he's – in my opinion –
favorite player.
I mean, in my opinion, I think he's the most – no matter who you think is the best player in the league, I think he's certainly, I absolutely think he's the most fun player in the league to watch. Just what he does, whether he's playing well or whether he's playing poorly, he's unbelievably fun to watch because he just tests the limits of what humans are able to do. It's incredible watching his athleticism and the plays he makes his mentality as well is amazing. But I think former players really appreciate that mental side from him, especially in an era that they deem has a lot of soft players, which I don't buy. I don't believe that. I think it's not true at all. I mean, there were guys who used to like get into fights with the media all the time back then. Like players used to get into fights with media members all the time for writing one bad article about them. And these players nowadays, when they go home, they have 5,000 tweets at them telling them how much they suck. And they just suck it up and they keep playing. Nothing ever happens. Like, I don't get how that is. I don't get how getting into a fight with a dude because he wrote one bad thing about you is makes you tough. But being able to just play through everyone telling you you suck all the time makes you soft. I don't really understand that. And I don't think that you can defend that when that argument is presented to you if you believe the opposite. But I do think that he appeals to former players.
Let me tell you something, Fred. The NBA has never been in a worse place than it is right now, Fred. Because you just got to get the ball in the post. None of these guys are ever going inside. So let me tell you something, Fred.
That's not a terrible Charles Barkley.
it's actually terrible.
Yeah, true. It's not a terrible Charles Barkley. I will tell you one thing about Barkley. Barkley's basketball opinions are obviously, you know, something. But I'll tell you one thing. I talk to a lot of people around the league who do agree with him on one point that he makes a lot. And it's that the quality of play around the league is down.
Yeah, I think that's nonsense.
There are a lot of people, like smart people, not like hot take people. Like really smart, incredibly information-driven people who strongly believe that the quality of the teams around the league are down. And they think that's part of the reason why numbers are up for individual great players.
I think there's a difference between quality of teams and quality of play.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Like, I think that there's probably like three elite teams this year. That may even be stretching. It may even just be two, depending on how you feel about Cleveland right now. And I guess defending how you feel about Houston too, but I think the quality of play on a night to night basis, I mean, it's hard to argue that it's been better in quite some time.
I think that's fair. Cause I honestly don't agree with it. I'm on your side. I think the league is better right now than it's been, I don't know since when, but certainly in a long time. And, there are people, there are smart people. These are not idiot hot take people. These are people who, if I told you their names, you'd be like, oh, that's a smart person. They totally disagree with me in that statement. They think the quality of the league overall is down. So
yeah, look, it's not an uncommon opinion. And certainly I think among casual fans in our age group that still, you know, very much romanticize the time when we grew up, think the quality of play is worse. When like you go back and watch those games, I mean, the quality of play was disgusting.
Yeah, that's, you know, what's funny? The time when we grew up was like the worst basketball we could,
right,
possibly see. Like it was,
and it's the thing that's the most romanticized right now. Like, look, I grew up as a fan of the '90s Knicks, and I love those teams. I, you know, will swear by them for the rest of my life. Those games were disgusting. And half the guys on those teams couldn't play now because they wouldn't be able to move with these guys that play right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm with you. It's especially like, honestly, I'll take 90s basketball over early 2000s basketball.
Oh, early 2000s.
I'll take 94 Knicks over like 2001 Pacers any day.
1,000%.
Any day. Like those,
yeah, I guess the Knicks games that got into like the, you know, 74-65 finals and whatnot weren't until more like the mid to late 90s when they were, you know, rivals with the Heat rather than the Bulls and the Pacers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the time when things got really bad. And then a few years after that, like after Jordan retired, when it was like the Nets in the finals a couple of years in a row, those teams like weren't even good. You know, that Sixers team that made the finals, the Pacers team that made the finals, those teams all got destroyed by the Lakers and the Spurs, and with good reason, you know, because they were just really bad teams that somehow made the finals. And like, you know, now that, first of all, that tells you exactly how long it is that the East has been, you know, the worst conference, because we're going back like 15, 16 years now at this point. But it's really difficult to argue that the quality of play during those years was better than it is now.
Hey, you're a Knicks fan. What do you think of Patrick Ewing going to Georgetown?
I love it, man. I'm so happy for Patrick. I mean, I think it's going to work out pretty well for him. Like, it's hard to think of somebody that is more able to sell Georgetown than the best player in the history of Georgetown, who also happened to have like an 18-year NBA career and then make the Hall of Fame, followed by 15 years as an assistant coach, during which time he coached under Jeff Van Gundy, Stan Van Gundy, and Steve Clifford. Like, I think that's a really big selling point, obviously. Going back home for him college-wise. And, I mean, the only thing that makes me sad is that, you know, he worked for 15 years to get an NBA head coaching job, and now it looks like that'll never happen. Although, obviously, you know, being the head coach of your alma mater is pretty cool, too.
Yeah, maybe obviously, he always wanted the NBA job. He was pretty open about that. But maybe he just didn't quite see this coming. Like, maybe he wants this more than a random NBA job that he has no emotional attachment to, you know? That wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, I never talked to him specifically about that question, but he certainly wanted an NBA job for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was very open about that.
I remember talking to him, like, one of the first games that I ever covered, about how, you know, he had already been an assistant for such a long time. And, like, did he think that – and this is not like, an official conversation or anything, just, like, hanging out on the court before the game. Just, like, did he ever think that time was going to come and – you know, the big man bias and assistant coaches and whatnot. And that's now going on like 5 years ago, you know?
Royce Young and I have a theory as to how you can get more former big men coaching teams.
What's the theory?
Change the jump ball rule so that whenever there's a jump ball, not to start games, but like when there's a tie up and there's a jump ball in a game, have the coaches have to have a jump ball to determine possession.
I thought you were going to say have the centers jump for every jump ball.
Oh, yeah. No. Well,
how does that?
That would be more practical. No, you have the coaches. You have the coaches perform the jump ball. They have to take off their jackets and they have to jump ball. Don't lie. How pumped would you be if it were like Steve Clifford versus Stan Van Gundy in a tie game with 5 seconds left and Steve Clifford versus Stan Van Gundy have to have a jump ball? How pumped would you be?
Well, you know what would be funny is if you had somebody like who was really tall but not physically well, like when Phil Jackson was coaching and had his hip and back problems. If you had him against like who's a super short coach? Let's say like Phil Jackson against
Earl
Jeff
Watson.
Van Gundy.
Earl Watson
against Jeff Van Gundy.
Yeah.
Jeff Van Gundy's like 5'8". How funny would that have been?
That would be great. That's what I'm saying. This rule should happen.
Or a Van Gundy, Pat Riley jump ball.
This rule would be great. There is no NBA coach combination that you could say to me, and I'd be like, that's terrible. That won't work. Any one of them. Even if it's just like Terry Stotts versus Nate McMillan. There's no beef there. But that would be great.
It's a Blazer rivalry.
That's actually true because he coached the Blazers. There you go. See, there's something for everything.
I like it. I'm into it.
Yeah, and you get a lot more centers coaching.
And that
Kevin
would be
McHale would be back on the bench.
The first ever rationale to make Kurt Rambis a head coach.
And you get Kevin McHale back on the bench. You'd be great.
It'd be great. I'm into it. I like it.
It's great. That should be like a D League rule.
That's, you know? That is where they test out new rules, is in the D League.
Also, if you saw coaches performing jump balls, like you would watch the D League more.
You know, it's the G League now.
Is it the G League officially now?
I don't know.
Or is that at the end of the year?
It's been made yet, but it's definitely being made.
No, I know it's being made.
It's a change that's definitely happening. I don't know if it has happened already.
I feel like it's becoming the G League next year because I've been writing D League, so.
It's probably not a good sign that I don't know if it's become official yet.
It's an even worse sign that neither of us have any idea. All right, we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it with Coach Jump Balls and us being clueless. So where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, JADubin5. you can find Locked On Knicks podcasts, all the same places you can find Locked On Thunder. And if you're interested, we are doing our Bracket of Sadness, one podcast quest to find the worst Knick since 2000. There's a bracket on the Twitter account. There's polls. It's a 64-player bracket to request to find the worst Knick since the year 2000. There's the Isaiah Thomas region. There's the Larry Brown region. There's the Herb Williams region. And there's the Kurt Rambis region, filled with a whole bunch of bad Knicks in there. And we're going to do that over the next couple of weeks because it's just more fun than watching actual Knicks games.
That bracket is so incredible, man. You killed that. It's so funny. It is so funny. It's all over the place.
Can I tell you something, actually? So my roommate had a couple of friends over the other night to watch the Final Four games. And we wound up, you know, we were talking for a while and we wound up talking about the Knicks. And one of them, independently of knowing that it had been made by me, brings up, did you guys see that bracket about all the terrible Knicks this week? And I was like, yeah, that's my fucking bracket.
That's awesome. I had two friends text me to tell you that that they loved it and they want to talk to you about it, but I didn't want to boost your ego that much.
Yeah, well, I don't need that much ego boosting, but if they want to talk to me about it, feel free.
Yeah, they both loved it and also like kind of hate you.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the reaction that I was going for.
Yeah, they I think if I can speak for them, their first reaction was, this is incredible, this is hilarious. Their second reaction was, wait, I hate this guy, this is so upsetting. And their third reaction was, I hate myself, why do I do this to myself? And I feel like that's kind of how Knicks fans process information.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's what the team does to you. I mean, this has not been a good season. This has not been a good decade. This has not been a good century. So, you know, and look, we haven't even had a superstar leave us after 8 years to complain about. So I think Thunder fans should consider themselves lucky.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, you can remember I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. Head on to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder or Locked On Knicks. And if you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com and find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz, and log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out Thunder Road, my blog there under the sports tab on the site. And you can follow all my team coverage and see what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow after the Bucks game on Tuesday night. We'll see if Westbrook makes history. He's got 6 straight triple-doubles right now. So 7 would tie the longest streak of his career. Jared, you want to hear a crazy stat?
I do.
This is a crazy Russell Westbrook stat. I was just browsing Basketball Reference the other day. I went to see the longest triple-double streaks ever. And the longest...
You nerd.
Of the 12 longest triple-double streaks in the NBA since 2012, how many do you think Russell Westbrook has?
Of the 12, I'll say 7.
9.
I was going to say 9, and then I was like, no, that's too high.
It's so crazy. He has 9 triple-double streaks of at least 3 games.
Yeah, so do I. Who doesn't? Who among us doesn't have 9 triple-double streaks of at least 3 games?
You play 2K ever? You play NBA 2K?
Not as much.
I played recently, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to chase a triple-double. I'm gunning for a triple-double with one guy, and I'm just going to gun for a triple-double, and I couldn't do it.
It's hard. You know why? Because
couldn't get the rebounds. Yeah, I couldn't get the
basketball
rebounds.
Basketball games.
Yeah, I couldn't get the rebounds.
You can't just, like, chase it, because it's the... There's no, like, internal logic of where the rebounds go in basketball video games.
Mm-hmm.
They just go to random places.
Mm-hmm. But if for the faction saying, wow, he's putting up video game numbers, incorrect, they're actually better than video game numbers because you can't get them in video games.
You're better than video game numbers, Fred.
I appreciate that. It's very nice of you.
You're welcome.
All right, so until tomorrow, I'll wrap up the Bucks game. It might be a little bit of a short one because I got to leave back-to-back, leaving for Memphis early on Wednesday morning. This road trip is going to be tough. I have a lot of early flights, and it's a lot of days. But I will be back still every weekday. So until Wednesday, until tomorrow, Locked On Thunder is locking up.